So we're on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph. We have a very, very challenging piece of Gemara today. We'll try to do the best we can. So we came to the conclusion that there are two issues in Psul Kurv Aliyedus, that a Karv is Psul Aliyedus. Number one is the case where one relative is testifying in a case where his own relative is on trial. And then we have a case where two witnesses are related to each other and they're testifying about a third party. And we derived yesterday from Psukim that since there was an extra pasuk, it came to teach me that even two witnesses who are related to each other cannot testify against a third party, even though they're not testifying on a relative, but they're testifying together as two relatives making up a unit. Rami Bar Chama tried to claim that he derived that from a svara based on the halacha of Adam Zomim, but Rava rejected it and he said that Adam Zomim, it's not that one aid is causing the guilt or the punishment to the other aid. That comes from the Hazama process itself. So that Rava has to substitute a drasha, a yalfusa, for the svara of Rava Bar Chama. And he says that it didn't have to say the word ben. It could have said the word ben, and it didn't have to say the word bonim. So the word bonim is teaching us bonim li alma, bonim li alma, meaning two bonim that are related to each other because they're brothers, who are testifying le'alma, in a case of someone else who's on trial. So these two brothers, let's say for example, cannot form a unit of testimony. That's why, for example, when I do Seder Kiddushin, so the first thing I ask the Eidim, are you related to each other? And then I'll ask them, are they related to the Chassan, to the Kala, and so forth. But if they're related to each other, they cannot testify together. Now, it's interesting because you might say, well, that's poshut, you know, that of course two brothers can't testify. But really, it's not poshut at all. Because if you assume that there's a chashash sheker, that the reason why the Torah doesn't want to believe relatives is because if one relative is testifying on the other relative, he has a certain negiah, you know, he certainly might want to... What do you say?
No.
Yeah, he certainly has a vested interest to try to vindicate his own brother. But if two brothers are testifying together against the third party, what's the problem there? It's like, take for example, Moshe V'Aaron. If Moshe V'Aaron would form a unit of testimony, what's the issue here? There's no what we call chashash sheker. There's no reason why we should suspect that they're lying. But as we've mentioned time and time again, psule edus, the disqualification, is what's called a psula guf. It's not always a chashash sheker. It's not always that we disqualify witnesses because we think they're lying, but there are technical halachic psulim that are, let's call it gzeiras hakosuv. The Torah says that they're posel. So, for example, a woman is not acceptable in most cases for testimony. A melech, a king, is not acceptable for testimony. These are all cases of psula guf. It doesn't have anything to do with the lack of trustability of nemanus, because a woman is certainly believed even in a case of life and death. For example, she's believed to testify about so-and-so's husband that he died. She saw him dead. It means she is credible, she has reliability, but the Torah said there's a psula guf. There's certain things that are technically possible. Even with regard to nogea b'edus, sometimes it's technical. So take, for example, we spoke about self-incrimination. In Jewish law, we have a principle called ein adam meisim atzmo rasha. We don't accept his testimony against himself, even though he's confessing a crime. I would say that that's based on the halacha, which is called Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. A person is related to himself. And therefore we're going to kick in this psul, this disqualification of kurva, even if we don't think he's lying. He doesn't have any vested interest to incriminate himself, and yet his edus is completely null and void. Okay. So all this we did yesterday. Now we're up to the word Ashkechan. Ashkechan Krove Ha'av. If you could mention to me what line it is, or how to find that line. Sometimes you can give me a siman.
The Tosfos Kivan.
It's below Tosfos Kivan?
Right, four lines of that Tosfos.
Four lines below Tosfos Kivan.
In the
middle of the line. Mm-hmm. Ashkechan Krove Ha'av. Everything that we saw until now of Lo Yumsu Avos Al Bonim, Avos meaning relatives through the father. That's called paternal relatives. But Krovei Ha'em Minolan, how do we know? And we'll soon see that the Mishnah says it explicitly, but the question is, what's the source for it? That even Krovim through the mother, maternal relatives, are likewise possible or excluded from Eidus. Now, how do we know this? So if you turn back to the Mishnah for a second on Chav Zayin Amid Beis, you don't even have to turn, you'll see in the Mishnah a whole bunch of cases that fit this category called Krovei Ha'em. For example, you have something called Achei Ha'em. So it means that, let's say you have an uncle who's married to an uncle who is the brother of your mother. So you relate to him through your mother. He's your uncle through your mother, your maternal uncle. He's posuliatus. Or, for example, we have a case called Achos Imo. Now, Achos Imo, don't take me literally, because Achos Imo, meaning his mother's sister, can't give testimony in general, but Baal Achos Imo. Now, Baal Achos Imo means that your uncle who's married to your mother's sister has the same status as your mother's sister. Right? He's an uncle, but he's like an aunt. And if that be the case, he's related to you through your mother. He's your mother's sister, if you followed him. He's married to your mother's sister. Or, for example, you have Baal Imo, which we call a stepfather, meaning he's married to your mother. Ubinayan. And even their children, these are all posel ahayit, and they're all related because they share a relationship through the mother. So how do we know that relatives through the mother are also posel? After all, the Torah only says lo yumsu avos al bonim. So the emphasis here is on the word avos. And once again, this would further prove my thesis from before, that psule kurva, what we call psula guf. I don't think that in terms of sheker, of being afraid of a witness perjuring himself, I don't think there'd be any difference whether it's his uncle through his mother, his uncle through his father. It's the same vested interest. On the contrary, the Chazal tell us that a person has a closer, in a certain sense, a more endearing relationship with his mother than he has with his father. But the answer is, Amakra avos trei zimni. The Torah repeats itself twice when it says the word avos. Right? Lo yumsu avos al banim, ubanam al avosam. So it says avos twice. And if it's avos twice, then we have to know why the second avos is there. And that's called, and I think I've mentioned it time and time again, im eino inyan, that if it's not to be taken literally, then we expand it. Im eino inyan l'krovei ha'av, we already have established with one avos, one word avos, that krovei ha'av apostle. So what's the second avos coming to expand the scope of the is tnei l'inyan krovei ha'em. Okay, now here, on this line in this Gemara, we have a major, major machlokas rishonim between the Rambam and other Rishonim. The Rambam in Perek Yud Gimel Mehilchas Eidus says the following, and I'll explain it why. He says that Krovei Ha'av are psulim min HaTorah. Other Krovim are only posel min Rabbanon. So the Kesef Mishnah says that how did the Rambam come to this very odd conclusion? Very surprising, remarkable, to say that Krovei Ha'av are only posel min Rabbanon. Says the Kesef Mishnah, the Rambam Shita is that there's a difference between that which is written in the Torah explicitly, Mefurish B'Torah, that's a Psul Doraisa, as opposed to that which is derived from an Im Eino Inyan. If you derive something from, quote, Im Eino Inyan, end of quote, then it's not Psul Midoraisa, it's only Midorabana. And as we go through this Gemara, we're going to see that this position of the Rambam is very, very difficult. In fact, the Ran and other Rishonim disagree, and they hold that the Imeno Inyan here is just simply placing the word Avos, placing Krovei Ha'em into the word Avos, that Avos means, you know, parents instead of fathers. And the Imeno Inyan is giving me pshat in a pasuk, because otherwise, if you don't accept the Imeno Inyan, you have an extra superfluous word Avos. So the word Avos, therefore, is Taich, it means through the mother. And the Rashba says it explicitly. The Rashba was before the Rashba. The Rashba says that all the psulim mentioned in our Mishnah are all psulim doraisa. And as we indicated before, there's a whole bunch of krovim that are listed in the Mishnah that are krovim through the mother. And they're all possibly doraisa. But this is the Rambam, says the Kes Mishnah, the unique shita, that Imeno Inyan is not explicit in the Torah, and therefore it's possible with Rabbana. I'm just wondering out loud if it's not possible that there are three different categories according to the Rambam. There's one category of Psul Doraisa, there's another category of Psul Drabbanon, and in between the two, in that sort of twilight zone, that amorphous area between the two extremes, you have something that's puzzle based on a Meneno Inyan. It's not Drabbanon and it's not Doraisa, it's somewhere in between. You know, in other words, the way we're presenting it from the Kesef Mishnah, it seems like it's black or white. It's either Doraisa or it's Drabbanon. You have Psulim Doraisa that are explicit, that's Avos, and then you have Psulim Drabbanon through the mother, which is Meneno Inyan. That's Drabbanon. As if to say it's a rabbinic invention. I'm wondering if perhaps the Rambam might hold that even with regard to Psulim Drabbanon, so to speak, there are two categories of Psulim Drabbanon. There's one category of Psul Drabbanon where the Rabbanon made a gzera. They were worried about the possibility of Sheker. For example, we spoke about Masachit Bekubia is Psul Drabbanon. We had a long discussion about Rav Sheshes on Daf Chavavim and Beis about Choshed Allah Arayos, and we said that he's possible with Rabbanon. Rashi says that when it says in the Gemara, according to Rav Sheshes, Arboim Bekatve V'Kosher, he's getting 40 lashes and he's Kosher Lievus, is Rashi says that set of Malkus that he's getting is only Makas Mardus. It's not Makas Doraisa because he's only Choshed Allah Arayos. And we don't have clear-cut evidence to establish that he should get Malkus Doraisa. So I would say in those cases, what we have is that the Rabbanon considers someone a Rasha, the Torah didn't call him a Rasha, and the Rabbanon are afraid that he's going to lie. We cannot trust his Eidus. That's already a pure, 100% the Rabbanon. The Torah relies upon this aid, and the Rabbanon did not. In the case of Krovei Ha'em, when we're dealing with a Psul Aguf, we're not talking about Chashad Sheker, why would the Rabbanon be motivated to create a new category of Psulei Krovim when we don't even understand the first category of Psulei Krovim? We'll soon see that the Gemara says that Krovim apostle even Lechayev, even if the one Karov says about the other Karov, he testifies that he owes $1,000, he's not believed. This is a Psul Aguf, this is Xeris HaKos, this is not logical. These are the technical rules of who qualifies and who doesn't qualify for Eidus. Now the Rabbanon are going to make a Xeris and they're going to say, well, you know, your uncle who's married to your mother's sister is Psul Eidus. Why? Because we think he's lying? We have a principle that the Torah doesn't think anyone's lying unless we have real, you know, strong proof to the contrary. So why would the Rabbanon make this gezeira? That's what I think, that even according to the Rambam, when he says Imeno Inyan is only the Rabbanon, he doesn't mean that it's a rabbinic gezeira, it's an enactment. What he means is that there's a certain status, a special status to a Doraisa, which is explicit in the Torah. But you could have something which is not explicit in the Torah, but it's Doraisa. And we're going to call it Drabbanon because of a lack of a better term. I'll give you an example. The Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Ishus says that Kiddushe Kesev is Midivrei Sofrim. And everyone and their uncle goes berserk. How can the Rambam say that the entire institute, our marriages are all Kiddushe Kesev? And the Rambam is saying that Kiddushe Kesev is Midivrei Sofrim, which is identical with Drabbanon. Well, what, you can tell me that if a man marries a woman by giving her by giving over a tabas, so that's only a rabbinic invention. So the Kesef Mishnah says that what the rabbi means by divrei sofrim is that it's derived from a gzeira shava. In other words, it's not explicit in the Torah. The Torah never spells out kedusha kesef, and we derive it from drushes. Yeah, but we wouldn't say, says the Kesef Mishnah, that if a man marries a woman with kesef, then on a Doraisa level they're not married. That the Rambam didn't mean. So again, there's certain distinctions, and again, it's very common in the Rambam, between different levels and how do you categorize even Doraisas. You can have a Doraisa that's explicit in the Torah, you can have a Doraisa that's not explicit in the Torah, and it might be derived from various Yalfusas, and the Rambam might use terms that sound like and indicate that it's only a rabbinic institution. I think this is a good example of something that is certainly possible to arise.
Halacha l'maisa to us, is there a difference?
There might be a difference. I'll tell you why. Remember, we had a sugya called hachraza. I'm going to ask you the following question, and you'll laugh at me, and rightfully so, because I would laugh at myself too. Would you tell me that your uncle, who's married to your mother's sister, needs hachraza? That we have to get up in Beis Din and we have to make achroz like we have to do for a gambler or a malva beribis or a mafriche yonim and all the sochrim b'shvius and all the cases that we had which require achroz. The answer is pashut, that when the rabbanon are creating a brand new psul edus, then you need achroz. But according to the Rambam, are we going to say that an uncle who's related to you through your mother needs achrozo? Now again, you could always answer, well, that's obvious, we don't need achrozo because everybody knows it's his uncle. But I think even more than that, we could say that according to the Rambam, the psul of a karov through his mother, maternal relative, is memela, it's automatic. It's not something that the Rabbanon have to step up to the plate. I'll give you another nafkimina. Let's say in a pinch, the Rabbanan need Eidus desperately. The whole, let's say, Kiddush HaKodesh or something would depend, the enterprise would depend on. They could come along and say, under certain circumstances, we're going to rely on these Eidim, even though we already disqualified them. That they can do because the disqualification is the Rabbanan. That's called Heimamru veHeimamru. But if the Pasul and the disqualification is Doraisa, I'm not sure that Rabbanan have the ability to play with this Eidus and say, we'll accept this Eidus when the Torah rejects the Eidus. So all these discussions about Psuli Eidus Doraisa, Psuli Eidus Rabbanan could be very, very relevant. Okay. Now the Gemara goes on. And again, all this should be understood in the light of the fact that we're talking about a Psul Karva as a Psul Aguf. Psul Aguf means it's not based on Sheker. The Gemara says, Ashkechan lechova lischus minolon. Very paradoxical question. The Gemara is saying something that's totally counterintuitive. The Gemara says, you know what? I'm going to argue that a karov is posel when he wants to testify against his karov, meaning for the loss and to condemn his relative, or to establish that his relative has to pay a loan, a fine, whatever it might be. Why? Because in the pasuk it says, Lo yumsu avos albanim. Correct? That the father is not going to be put to death based on the testimony of his son. Now, obviously, that's called what? Is that lechova l'schus? When you say that we don't accept the testimony of the son to put the father to death, what is that called? Lechova? What kind of aid this was it? Lechova. It was certainly lechova. So therefore the Gemara says, Ashkechan, if you're basing the conclusion, the derivation of a psul kurva on the pasuk lo yumsu avos albanim, then Ashkechan, we've only found it lechova. B'lischus minolan. And I'm going to spend a few minutes in Mirtz Hashem talking to you about these three words, lischus minolan. I think I'm going to dedicate about 10-15 minutes at least to this three word line in the Gemara, l'schus minolan, but I'm coming back to that right away to pay up my chov. But first, let's see the Gemara's answer. Omar kra yumsu yumsu trei zimni. Right, it says lo yumsu avos albanim and lo yumsu barim al avos. The Torah had an extra word yumsu. We didn't need the word yumsu twice. One of them is completely superfluous. The Torah could have said lo yumsu avos al banim ubanim al avos. Why did it say lo yumsu banim al avos? So the extra word lo yumsu is coming to teach me something beyond the simple pshat, the simple scenario or subject of this pasuk. The simple subject, straightforward, is lechova. What about a case of l'schus? So since the Torah adds an extra word in this pasuk, we again apply the principle of im eino inyan lechova, tneu inyan l'schus. Now again, I'm going to have a lot to talk about here, what the Gemara was thinking in its Hava, meaning that l'schus, maybe the Karav would be kosher, based on the fact that Pasuk is talking about Chova. But before we get to that, I just want to ask how the Rambam is going to read this Gemara. Because according to the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah says, anytime you derive something from him, Eino Inyan, it's only Derabbanan. Does the Kesef Mishnah therefore think that according to the Rambam, in a case where the Karov is testifying for the detriment, lechova, of his relative, then the Torah passes him. If he's testifying for the benefit of his Karov, that would only be a psul d'rabbanan. That's almost impossible. That's an untenable position. And again, this further, I think, supports our contention that when the Ram makes this distinction between lehedja, that which is exclusive of furish betor, and that which is derived from an annual inyan, one is the orais, one is the rabbanan, he shouldn't be taken literally, superficially, that the Ram means that this is a rabbinic institution. The Ram is just pointing out that certain things are explicit and certain things are derived from yalfusis. Now, again, it's hard for me to come up with a hardcore nafkamina in this context. I'll give you a different context. And this is the Ran at the end of Masechta Yoma. The Ran says that there's a difference between two different violations. One violation is you violate something that is explicit in the Torah, and in the other cases you violate something that is derived from Torah Shebal Peh, it's Doraisa, but it's not explicit in the Torah. For example, the Ran says that there's a difference between Achila and Shasia on Yom Kippur as opposed to the other Inuyim, like Nilas Asadol, Tash Shamita, Rechitza, and so forth. And he says the following, that in the case of Achila and Shasia, that's considered Mefurash, that's considered Isa Bekra Lehedja, it's in the Pasuk. But the others are derived from, and again, you'd have to learn the 8th parak of Yuma. Half of the parak is dedicated to how you derive the other Inuyim. And they're all based on, you know, an analysis of a pasuk here in Yechezkel, a pasuk here elsewhere in Tanakh, and so forth and so on. That's all considered Eino Mefurish B'Torah. Says the Ran, there's the following nafkemina. We have a mitzvah called Hocheach Tochiach Esamisecha. So if I can somehow prevent you, influence you, and successfully win you over so that you will not violate an Isur, then I'm obligated under the law and the mitzvah of Tochacha to do so. However, there's another halacha, and that's called Mecha'ah. Mem Ches Aleph Hey. Mecha'ah means that if I see someone violating a mitzvah in the Torah, I have to make a protest. And that chiyuv has nothing to do with tochacha. I mean, even if my protest is not going to have any influence on what he's doing, nevertheless, I have to make a mecha. So the Ran says, it depends. If it's lehedja, if it's explicit in the Torah, and he's violating it, and I'm present at that Torah, I have to make a mecha. But if it's something that's not explicit in the Torah, even though it's Doraisa, let's say it's Halakha Moshe Misinai, etc., then I don't have to make a Mecha. So for example, Chil Shabbos, I would have to make a Mecha. And that's why you see all these things that go on around here. I'm not getting into this. You know, my father once stopped one of these youngsters who was, he was, he, He was throwing, throwing at cars on Shabbos. You know, Shabbos, you know what I'm talking about? So my father stopped him. He says, why are you throwing stones on Shabbos? So he got very insulted, the young man. He says, I'm not throwing stones, I'm throwing apples. Like as if you can't kill someone with an apple, you know. Anyway, so that's called a macha. You know, you make a macha. But if it's not mefurish lehedge of a cross, says Aran, then you don't make a macha. You chayv in tochacha. If you can somehow influence him not to violate Allah Moshe Misina, you have to do so. Then Aran goes on to discuss something else. There's a principle in halacha called Mushva V'Yomid Me'ar Sinai, which means the following, that if a person takes an oath to violate something in the Torah, then the oath is not valid. Why? Because he's already taken an oath and he's contradicting with the second oath, the first oath he took at Ar Sinai. So the Ran says that only applies to a davar hakosuv b'Torah lehedja. If it's explicit in the Torah, then it's considered mushba v'yomid Ar Sinai. If he takes a shvua to cancel what the shvua that he accepted Ar Sinai, it's invalid. But if it's not lehedja, even though it's doraisa, then your shvua would be chal, and then you have to work out exactly what he does with that case. In that case, so again, I just want to point out to you, and I'm probably not even touching the tip of the iceberg, that there are differences in halacha between something which is explicit in the Torah and something that's derived totally from Torah Shebal Peh, from the oral law, like an Eino Inyan in this case. And that's what the Rambam, I think, is trying to be sensitive to. But I don't believe for one moment that the Rambam would make a difference, a distinction, between krovim who are made lechova, which is explicit in the Torah, lo yumsu, as opposed to krovim who are made lischus. In both cases, for sure, the edus of krovim is completely null and void. It's disqualified legamre. Okay. Now I want to talk to you for a few minutes about these three words in the Gemara. One of the strangest phrases I've ever seen in the Gemara. L'schus minolan. What do you mean l'schus minolan? The Gemara needs a source that krovim cannot testify l'schus. Hadvarim kal v'chomer. Let me read to you the kash of the Ran. The Ran says, "Amai lo nelef mi kal v'chomer." Why should we derive this conclusion? Because im lechova, if the Torah says that you cannot testify against your first cousin, right, to be mechayev him, to condemn him, guilty as accused, or he's chayev to pay money as accused. Is kolshkein shepasul is chus? How much more so if I'm testifying about my cousin that he should be vindicated, that he's guiltless, or he doesn't have to pay? Why does the Gemara feel that we have to find a source for the psul kurva l'schus? If the Torah says you're pasul l'chova, then how much more so you're pasul l'schus? Very strange question. Now the Ran's answer is what I call technical. What do I mean by technical? The Ran, to explain our Gemara, invokes a principle which appears all over Shas that goes the following: Dovra nilmad mikal v'chomer torach v'kosav l'kro. That very often, even something which we could derive logically, the Torah wanted to spell it out. Which again might touch on what we said before, the difference between that which is explicit is lehedja in the Torah Shebaksav and that which requires Torah Shebal Peh. The Gemara's question is, can you find some sort of a pasuk, even though you could derive l'schus from a kal v'chomer, but maybe it's somewhere in the Torah v'kosav l'kro. But I'm more interested in the second answer, the Ran. And the truth is, I'm even more interested in the answer of the Torah's Chaim. But let's see the second answer of the Ran. He says the following: "Binayin lanu shekrovim psulim litztaref li'edus lezakos acherim she'enam krovim shalahem." Rabosai, we started this shiur today with a distinction between two categories of psul kruva, disqualification of relatives. One is that relatives can't testify against relatives, and number two, they can't testify as a unit against a third party who's not related to them. Says the Ran, our Gemara is focused on the second category of psul kurva, when you have two krovim who are testifying against a third party. And in this context, there's no kal v'chomer, meaning if the Torah says that two krovim, right, let's say Moshe, the Aaron cannot testify against the third party, maybe that's only l'chova. Because after all, we don't know why we should exclude Moshe V'Aaron. I mean, I would have said that Moshe V'Aaron testifying is the greatest, most reliable testimony you can imagine under the sun. What could be better than Moshe and Aaron? But the Torah says that's possible. Well, maybe the Torah only possible that L'chova, because that's the context of this possible, or Yumsu Avos Albanim, says the Ran. But if Moshe V'Aaron, together as a unit, want to testify against Yankel Beryl, so that they could do. Because again, we don't know why they can't testify against Yankel Beryl, but whatever it is, the Torah said that they cannot do so. But if they want to testify on behalf or in favor of Yankel Beryl, maybe they should be cautious. That's the answer, the second answer of the Ran. So again, just to summarize, what was Gemara's Havamina here, that we need a Yalfusa in order to establish that Krovim apostle even Lizchus? We have number one answer, that Tarach v'Kosel Lekra, that the Gemara thinks that even something which we derive logically through a Kal v'Chomer, the Torah went out of its way to spell it out. And the second answer of the Ran is we're talking about the Psul of Kurva when they are two Krovim who are Mitztarfim Lahoy, they become part of one Kak, and they want to testify against the third party. If they're testifying against him, which is called Lechova, that's explicit in the Pasuk, Torah says Lo Yumsu. But supposing they want to testify that Yankel Beryl is exempt, he is vindicated, for that I need a special Pasuk. And then we have a third answer. Now we're fast forwarding history by about 9 centuries. Well, I'm exaggerating, by about 7 centuries, and we're going to the Torah Chaim. The Torah Chaim says the following: Ein psul kurva mishum chashad sheker. Relatives are excluded from, disqualified from testimony, not because they're not reliable, not because they lose credibility. Because we have a principle of nechshedu Yisrael lahoyt sheker. We don't suspect that a Jew would falsify his testimony, would perjure himself. For example, we have a case of Ava and Sina. We know that there's a close relationship, or on the contrary, they're enemies, they're adversaries. Nevertheless, the Torah says they can testify. Ella, but rather Zoe Gzeres HaKosuf, what we call the Psul HaGuf. He calls it Gzeres HaKosuf. The Torah decreed that Krovim apostle. Oh, Kave on Shematzinu Psul. Where do we find this Gzeres HaKosuf that invalidates the testimony of relatives? That's only Rak Lechova. That's where it says in the pasuk is Ein Lanu Lifsol Zchus. We don't have the right to take it one step further, even if all the logic in the world would compel that if you posel them Lechova, then certainly, how much more so, it goes without saying, they should be posel Lechus. We're not allowed to apply human logic within the framework of Exeris HaKosev. So, for example, if you would tell me that a shofar is taken from an aisle, well, let's say a shofar is taken from a paro, let's say, and it's kosher, if you would say such a thing, and that itself is an issue, so don't walk out of here. But if, let's say, so I would say, how much more so a shofar of an aisle? Why? Because an aisle reminds us of the Akedah, blah, blah, blah. Nein, you don't have the right to make kalvachomers. Because do we know why we blow a shofar in Rosh Hashanah? Can anyone give me a logical reason why we blow a shofar? I happen to like a clarinet. You like a sax. Everybody likes his own flute. What do they call those things? The chalil. You remember the chalil? Mm-hmm. You know, if you see in a real serious orchestra a flute, you know that that flute is going to change the whole nature of the music. A flute is very, very important. I don't have rights to derive conclusions based on human logic. I don't know why the Torah says to blow a shofar. I have other instruments that I like better than a shofar. And probably if we took a census, even though Rabbi Myers is a great shofar blower here in the ELC, but I would still assume that there are much more popular ways of blowing instruments than a shofar. Frankly speaking, I personally, I'm not a big fan of the sound of a shofar. I don't know, maybe you love it, but I can't even dance to a shofar blowing. It just doesn't sit well with me. So I'm going to apply Kal Vachomer. So if the Torah says this shofar is kosher, then certainly that shofar is kosher. No, there's no Kal Vachomer, there's no human logic. The Torah says a shofar. If the Torah says a shofar of this shofar, it's this shofar and not that shofar. Here too, I don't understand the logic of why Edom who are Krovim apostle. Why should Moshe and Aaron be apostle? They lose their credibility because they're related to each other. The Torah says they're apostle, that's Gzeiros HaKosev. Says the Torah Chaim, if you're operating within Gzeiros HaKosev, you are bound by the words of the Torah. When the Torah decrees, you can't go beyond that. Use all the logic in the world, it's not going to help you. So you logically would say, well, if the Torah disqualifies Krovim in a case of Chova, then how much more so if the Torah would say the case is Chus, when he has vested interest to save his relative? Nay, nay, nay. We don't apply any logic. It's pure Gzeiros HaKos. And therefore, you need a pasuk to teach me that even Lizchus, the Krovim are disqualified. And for that, we need an extra word, Yumsu. And that's called an Eino Inyan. Now the Gemara goes on. Ashkechan v'dinei nefashos. The Torah disqualifies the testimony of relatives in the case of a capital crime. Somebody's life is in danger, is on the line, because if he's condemned, he'll be put to death. So here the Torah wants impeccable, absolutely reliable testimony, and the testimony of relatives is not acceptable. But the dini mominus minalan, the pasuk itself, lo yumsu avos, is talking about dinei nefashas. It says lo yumsu. It's a murder trial or it's a capital trial. But what about dini mominus? Maybe in dini mominus we can lower our standards and we could accept the testimony of relatives. Amar kra, the Torah says. This is in Vayikra Chav Dalid. It says over there, Mishpat Echad Yilachem. And what does Mishpat Echad Yilachem mean? It says Mishpat Echad Yilachem Lager Ka Ezrach. And the Pasuk Pshat in the Pasuk is that all Jews are equal in front of the, in the eyes of judgment, in the eyes of the court. Doesn't matter if you're an Ezrach, if you're a Ger. But the Gemara thinks that that's not enough to justify this pasuk. Just to tell me that all Jews are created equal in the eyes of the law. I don't need a pasuk for that. But rather the pasuk is coming to tell us that the mishpat is shoveh. The mishpat echad. Echad means shoveh. It doesn't mean the person who's on trial or he's being judged that he is shoveh no matter who he is, whether he's an Ezrach or a Ger. But rather the emphasis on Mishpat Echad. It's got to be one law, one standard of judgment throughout any Mishpat. And there's Mishpat Atzmo Yeh Shoveh. And what does this mean that the Mitzvah Atzmo, the Mishpat Atzmo Yeh Shoveh? It means Bein B'dini Mominos, Bein B'dini Nefashos. It's always going to be Mishpat Echad. Shoveh Lechem. We actually touched on this at the beginning of the first parak of Sanhedrin. We were talking about Dayanim and judges. If you might recall, we spoke about the requirements of judges and who's kosher to be a judge, and we discussed Dini Mamaros and Dini Fashos, and we have a principle called Mishpat Echad Yielachem, and therefore the Mishpat is Shaveh, Bein B'dini Fashos, Bein B'dini Mamaros. If the Torah excluded Krovim and disqualified them for Eidus in the Fashos, then ipso facto, these Krovim are possibly Eidus in Dine Momonos as well. Now, I'm just going to quiz you. Who's my favorite Rishon other than Rashi on Masechta Sanhedrin? Who remembers? Nobody remembers. Okay, I'm a little disappointed. The Yad Ramah, I've mentioned him thousands of times here. So, the Yad Ramah says that we're going to derive from this pasuk Mishpat Echad Yilachem that we equate Dine Mominus and Dine Fashos, because in that same chapter, which is the 24th chapter of Sefer Vayikra, in the very previous pasuk, right before it says Mishpat Echad Yilachem, the Torah says the following. It's the very end of Parshas Emor. Umake behemo yishalmena, umake adam yumos. Mishpat echad yilachem. So we have a case of Makah Behema, that's Dinei Mamonos, and we have Makah Adam, which is Dinei Nefashos. In the first case of Makah Behema, the Torah says Yishalmena. Dinei Mamonos means you are obligated to compensate the Nizak who lost his shor. And in the Sefer, the Pasuk, Makah Adam Yumos, he is put to death because he killed a human being. And then it says Mishpat Echad Yilachem. So the Pasuk says the Arama of Mishpat Echad Yilachem immediately follows on the heels of the Pasuk Makah Behema Yishalmena Makah Adam Yumos, which equates Dinei Mamonos with Dinei Nefashos, and therefore Mishpat Echad Yilachem means it's Shaveh. And the rules and regulations that govern Eidus as far as Dinei Nefashos are the same identical rules and regulations that govern Eidus as far as Dinei Mamonos is concerned. Okay. Now we have a kash on the Rambam. You remember the Rambam Shita is that the Psulei Aim, the Krovei Aim, are only the Rabbanim. According to the Kesef Mishnah, we take that simply, that's what the Rambam says, and that's what he means, and they're only possibly the Rabbanim. Now, wait a second. We just finished learning here, Mishpat Echad Yilachem, that Psulei Kurva are possible based on this possible both for Dinei Nefashos and for Dinei Mamonos. But just one second. If they're krovim min ha'aim, the Rambam said that the psul is only derabbana. And that's because krovi ha'aim are not derived explicitly from the pasuk. The Torah is talking about lo yumsu avos, which means through the father. But we're going to derive the mother from what we call an im'eno inyan. And that generates only a psul derabbana. Now, what is going to be the deal, according to the Rambam, in a case of Dinei Mamonos? You have a monetary case, the Edom are relatives. So for example, I told you before that when I'm a Sada Kedushin, I ask the Edom if they're related. Let's say Eli Ksuba. Right? Eli Ksuba. Now the Ksuba is Dinei Mamonos. It's all about Mamon. A Ksuba is a document about Mamon. And I'm going to ask these two Edom who are about to sign the Ksuba, are they related? Is that a Doraisa requirement? In other words, the Psul, if they were related, would be Doraisa, it's only Drabbana. Well, where does it say in the Pasuk that in Dinei Mamonos, Krovim are Psulim? You won't find it in the Pasuk. What you'll find is that after Makah Behemi Shalbeto Makah Adam Yumas, it says Mishpat Echad Yilachem. Says the Kesef Mishnah, that's not mefurish in the pasuk. That's not explicit in the Dorah, in the Torah. It's no different than im'eino inyan. It's derived from a drasha. So the Kesef Mishnah asks, if that be the case, are we going to say that according to the Rambam, all psule kurva in Eidus Mamonos, or is the whole enterprise, the whole institution, is only derabbanan? Then in Dinei Mamonos, which is not explicit in the pasuk, krovim are kosher midaraisa, and they're only pasul derabbanan. Says the Kesef Mishnah, no. This is not what we call an eino inyan. An eino inyan means you take it completely out of context. It doesn't belong here. It tells you to derive halacha there in some other context. But here, what do we have? We have a pasuk that says Mishpat Echad Yilachem, and what this pasuk is saying is that you have to have one set of rules and regulations for both Dinei Mamonos and Dinei Nefashos. Once we have this interpretation, then we go back to the pasuk and we say that whenever the pasuk says X about Dinei Nefashos, it's the same as true. That same rule or regulation of X applies to Dinei Mamonos. So the Mishpat Echad Yilachem now is able to put this back into the pshat of the pasuk. Right? So basically, we would have derived Dinei Mamonos from Svara, and we would have said that Krovim are possible in Dinei Mamonos as well. But since the Torah is talking about Lo Yumsu, we don't see that the Torah expands and extends the scope of the psul kurva to dinimono. So we need some sort of a yalfusa drasha to teach me that that which is logically, intuitively correct is accepted by the Torah. That which we would accept the psul kurva even in dini momenos, which is intuitively correct, it's based on human svara, is nevertheless the Torah wanted to spell it out. As we mentioned earlier, that the Gemara says that even something you could derive logically, the Torah wanted to spell it out. And therefore, in dini momenos, the Torah is basically, through this pasuk of Mishpat Echad Yilchem, spelling out that psul kurva applies even Mishpat Echad Yilchem, even in Dine Momenos. Even the Rambam would agree that that's a requirement, that's halacha to Oraisa. But Shar Krovim, meaning, let's say, for example, Krovim through the mother, Einam Klulim B'Pshat HaPasuk. The Pasuk says Avos. There's no way that you could take Imahos and put it into the Pasuk of Avos. And therefore, the whole institution of Krovim that are related through the mother is all drabon. Okay, now we get to the real tough part. this is really the next piece of Gemara. It's a little bit challenging for me, but I'm going to try. I try. What we're about to embark upon, Rabosai, is to try to set up how related are relatives such that they're disqualified for testimony. There's going to be something called Rishon B'Rishon, something called Sheni B'Sheni, then there's Rishon B'Shlishi. So the basic ground rules, I understand. But then when the book gets into nitty-gritties, it's a little bit more sticky. The ground rules are the following. Avos Ubanim, we'll explain what that means in a second. That's all called Rishon B'Rishon. So it means the following. The relationship of a father to a son and vice versa is called Rishon L'Rishon. But the Torah says Avos. Avos means two brothers. Otherwise it would say Avu Ben, but two brothers. Two brothers are considered Rishon B'Rishon. Okay. Now, what's the story when we go one generation down, let's say a grandfather and a grandson? So a father and a son would be Rishon V'Rishon. Now we're adding another generation. Now it has to become what we call Sheni V'Rishon, meaning the grandson is called Sheni. Again, it's so confusing because you would have said that the grandson is Shlishi, right? He's third in line from his grandfather. But name, the son himself is called a Rishon. So if the son is called a Rishon vis-a-vis his father, then we go to the son's son and we get to a Sheni. So the son's son is called a Sheni. So if he's testifying on his grandfather, that's called Sheni B'Rishon. If the grandfather is testifying on his grandson, that would be Rishon B'Sheni. Okay? Oh, now we get to the following. We get to the case of an uncle and a nephew. So again, if the two brothers are called Rishon B'Rishon, then the son of one of those two brothers becomes a Sheni B'Rishon. So we have two scenarios which fit in the category of Sheni B'Rishon. Number one, we have the grandson vis-a-vis his grandfather. And number two, the nephew vis-a-vis his uncle. Why? Because that's called Sheni B'Rishon, because the two brothers are Rishon B'Rishon. And once we drop down one generation, we go down to Sheni. So it's Sheni B'Rishon. And it's called Sheni B'Rishon because we're going back to the original, you know, generation, the two brothers, which is called Rishon B'Rishon. So the Gemara says the following. Oh, so one second. So now, I'm sorry, I missed the punchline here. Sorry. So you have Rishon B'Rishon, which means either a son and a father or two brothers. We have Sheni B'Rishon, which means either a grandson with his grandfather or a Ben Ach, which means a nephew with his uncle. And now we get to the next level, which are two cousins. Now, two cousins means that each one is a sheni. Why is each one a sheni? Because the kurva, the relationship, is through his father. And that itself makes it in, right? So it's but it's not his father, it's his father's brother. So if it's his father's brother, that already makes it into a sheni. So that's called a sheni. So if, as we said before, the nephew is testifying against or for his uncle, or vice versa, that would be sheni berishon. What if he's testifying for or against his first cousin? That's called sheni b'sheni. Now, if these two first cousins would have children, which we call second cousins, that would be shlishi b'shlishi. Okay. Now, Omar Rav. Now, Rav, in a sense, I mean, don't take this literally, but he's looking out at his relatives and pointing to them. And he's saying, can you testify on my behalf? Can I testify on your behalf? So the first person he looks at is his uncle, which is called Achi Abba, Lo Yoidli. Which means he, my uncle, my father's brother, cannot testify on my behalf. We said that that would be a Sheni Berishon. And of course I can't testify, says Rav, on my uncle because of this psul of Sheni Berishon. And now he goes on and he says, Hu ubno v'chasano. Now, not only is my father's brother excluded from testifying on me as an uncle to a nephew, but his son, who is my first cousin, is also excluded, and that's called Sheni B'Sheni. And then we have Chasono. Chasono means that not only is my uncle's son Posuliedus, but my uncle's daughter is Posuliedus. Now again, as I've said to you many times, a woman is not qualified for it. So when I use the word daughter here, what I mean is her husband, which is a son-in-law, right? So my uncle's son-in-law is like my uncle's daughter, which would be Sheni B'Sheni. And that's based on the principle called Baal Ki Ishto, that a husband has the same status as his wife. The Afani Lo Oid Lo. I can't testify against or for my uncle, my father's brother. Ani ubni v'chasani. Neither myself, nor my son. Now this is interesting, because the son is what you call a great nephew. He's testifying now on his great uncle. That would already be Rishon B'Shlishi V'chasani, and my son-in-law, which is the same status as my daughter. So my children can't testify on my uncle. That's Achi Avi. So Rav is saying Achi Avi, in terms of my relationship with him, would be a Sheni Berishon. But my children, that's already Rav looking at his children as far as the vis-a-vis the uncle is concerned. That's already Shlishi. That's already a Shlishi Berishon. Now I'm not sure why Rav leaves out a grandson, because that's a grandson is also Rishon B'Shlishi. So I'm not sure exactly why he omits that. Okay. In fact, the Gemara Amai, why does Rav say that his children cannot testify for or against his uncle, Havile Shlishi Berishon? And if you look at the Mishnah, Anan Sheni B'Sheni Tanan, Sheni Berishon Tanan. But Shlishi Berishon Lo Tanan, Rav seems to be adding something that's not omitted from the Mishnah, which means it's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah only goes as far as to disqualify a Sheni B'Sheni. So you have two sons of two brothers, the first cousins, that's called a Sheni B'Sheni. And in this case, when you're going down one generation further, so the children of Rav, vis-a-vis Rav's uncle, that's already Shlishi B'Rishon. That's already the third generation. Right, so you have the first generation, which is Rav's father and uncle, father and father's brother. Then you have Rav, that's already the second generation, so the uncle vis-a-vis his nephew is called Sheni Berishon. And now you go down to the third generation, which are the children of Rav, vis-a-vis Rav's uncle, what we call a great nephew. I never understood the modern Hebrew. They call it Dod Zaken. Have you ever heard that? So I have a lot of great nephews and nieces, so I don't like it when they call me Dod Zaken. I feel like an old man. Anyway, so Shlishi Berishon is completely omitted from our Mishnah. So we don't have a source for Rav's conclusion that his children cannot testify against or for his uncle, or vice versa. Why did Rav assume that this would be a psul? After all, that's not included in the Mishnah, because that's a case of Shlishi Berishon, which was omitted from the Mishnah. The impression you get from the Mishnah is that Shlishi Berishon would be kosher, and a great nephew could testify against or for his great uncle. So the Gemara answers the following: My chasano diktoni b'masnisin. Okay, let's go back to the Mishnah. Can I just borrow this for a split second? In the Mishnah, it says Eluhein akrovim. It says Achiv, Achi, Aviv, Achi, Imo. So we're talking about brothers and uncles. We said a brother to a sister. In that case, it's his sister's husband, his brother-in-law, etc., etc. And then it says Vechasono. Just one second. Where did I miss this here? Valach Hazuma Chomer Vegiso. Oh, here it is. Hein Ubneim Vechasoneihem. Now we assume that Chasoneihem would be the son-in-law, correct? That, right? That would mean he who's married to my daughter, right? That would be chasano. So the Gemara now is reinterpreting the word chasano. That chasano, just one second, my chasano, Rav is going to say that when the Mishnah says that the krovim of his father's brother apostle, and the son of his father's brother's apostle, that's first cousins, that's Sheni B'Sheni, and then it says V'chasono. So again, you're talking about my uncle has a son-in-law. Eina kavana l'chasan ach oviv. It doesn't mean the son-in-law of the uncle, who would have the same status as Sheni B'Sheni of first cousins. Ela kavana l'chasan bino shelach aviv. Hasan bino shelach aviv. Now let's.
Son.
I'm sorry. Let me say it again. Ela kavana l'chasan bino shelach aviv. Just one second. Why is that door shlishi? I don't get it. Okay, just give me one second, Asher, because you know. I always go back to Plato's Republic.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, Plato's Republic? I mean, Plato has a whole philosophy work in which he tries to prove that when it comes to basic logic and mathematics, you have to let the person figure it out himself. There's no way of teaching it. But you'll teach it to me. I just want to make sure if I can. Okay, so chasan bino. Oh, in other words, bino shalachi aviv is sheni b'sheni. That's his first cousin.
Right.
Oh, now his first cousin marries off his daughter to a son, to a son-in-law. So it's my first cousin's son-in-law. So it means it's basically my first cousin's daughter. Again, I always say that Baal Ki Ishto. So it comes out that now we're dealing with a shlishi. Why? Because the relationship of Hasan bino shel his uncle shel achi aviv is already a dar shlishi. A dar shlishi. Now it would seem to me that, again, I don't know if what I'm saying is right or wrong, that we're talking about a sheni b'shlishi now, right? Because again, forgetting about his son-in-law, but the son of my uncle is a sheni b'sheni, is my first cousin, so his child would be already a sheni b'shlishi. So he says, "Uvikano chiyach Rav Shegam Shlishi Berishon Pasul Lahoy. Right, what was the question that we had about Rav? That in the case of Rav's son vis-a-vis Rav's uncle, that was Shlishi, right, Rishon B'Shlishi. Right, because Rav's uncle to Rav is Rishon B'Sheni, and now to Rav's son, the uncle to his great nephew is Rishon B'Shlishi. And now what we say is that if the uncle has a grandson-in-law, which means the uncle's son has a daughter who he marries off to his chasan, to his son-in-law, that son-in-law is possible to the child of the uncle, which means to his first cousin, right? First cousin one generation beyond the first cousin. So if the Mishnah apostles Sheni B'Shlishi, how much more so Rishon B'Shlishi? In other words, there's a Kal V'Chomer in the Gemara. The uncle to his great nephew is a closer relative than a first cousin once removed. Okay? So we'll stop here. Let's just make a note where we got to. We're up to V'Lisni Ben Bino. Okay, we're going to talk about grandson. Oh, that's what I was asking you before. Where did the grandchildren get lost? Because that would be a great example of Rishon B'Shlishi. So that's, I think, going to be the next sugya, which we'll probably never tomorrow.